Welcome to Breaking News with Ben Hunt, Jack Forehand, and Matt Ziegler. Before we start, let me remind you what the show is not. Breaking News is not a show about fact-checking. Breaking News is not a show about saying whose bias is the one and only correct bias. And Breaking News is definitely not a show about calling out fake news. Breaking News is a show where we look at today's top stories and have a conversation around our favorite critical question, why am I reading this now? Drawing on the headlines we're tracking at fiatnews.com, join us as we talk about what's collectively making us tick with clear eyes, full hearts, and this obligatory disclaimer. Nothing in this podcast is advising you to buy or sell any security or to do anything with your money. Seriously, you should only act on investment advice from someone you know and someone who knows your unique situation. We are not that person.
Hello and welcome back to Breaking News. I'm Matt Ziegler, joined as always by Mr. P&L for a Purpose, producer extraordinaire, give the people a charitable hello, Jack Forehand.
Hello, Jack Forehand. Mr. Tired. I have to thank Ben for rescheduling this because we were supposed to do it the day after P&L for a Purpose, and you would have gotten Vegetable Jack if we had done that.
Jack's Veggie Tales is a YouTube show I would watch. And of course, Epsilon Theory's own Mr. Birthday Boy, who's not Willie Mays, Sigmund Freud, or the exploding Hindenburg, we don't think at least. Ben Hunt, say hello, Ben.
Hello, Ben. Yes, May 6th, a day that, me and Willie Mays. I love that. I love sharing a birthday with Willie Mays. That's a good one.
As a really, really cool person to share a birthday with. All right, we've got so much news to go through today. We've got our zeitgeist this week where, hey, financial nihilism, put your quarter up. Dave and Buster's gambling is officially here. Can't wait for that three-team parlay on the money line for Asteroids, Galaga, and Mrs. Pac-Man. Got a tweet of the week from Ben on the pickup in U.S. labor costs, how it's maybe stickier than an arcade floor next to the gumball machines. Okay, extra old-timey today. Jack, you've got a dumb question about being at a financial planning conference, and the products they were pushing all were based on the macro view of higher for longer rates and inflation forecasts. And then I've got a cultish corner about Kelly Clarkson's hit Since You've Been Gone, which is the song I picked for our P&L for a Purpose playlist I did and assigned to Ben. And there's actually a really cool map and terrain story behind it. But first, big story this week. While the Trump trial and the college campuses seem to be barking loudly, the DJT, or perhaps better known as the Trump Media and Technology stock, seems to be the dog that's not barking right now. So what's going on with America's greatest meme stonk, Ben?
Honestly, this is just a fascinating story to me about what we pay attention to and what we don't pay attention to. What is in the media all the time and what is shunted over to the side. And I'm fascinated by stories like this, the meta stories, right? It's not the story itself, it's the choice of stories. Why is this story getting attention where this other story is not? And so certainly what we're seeing today is that you've got, I'll put it on the left supporting media, which is most media outlets, most of our national 24/7 media outlets. You've got enormous coverage of the Trump criminal trial in New York. So it is literally a 24-hour coverage, you know, that kind of emergency coverage with CNN, where this is all day, every day while the trial is ongoing. It's all about this. If you're over on Fox News, which, just as an aside, kind of in our, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at what we call fiat news, the degree to which these news outlets use language that's meant to change your mind, or not language that's meant to inform, language that's meant to tell you how to think about an issue. Fox News is at the top of our measures. And then 2 through 7 are the left-leaning media that you would expect. Number 2 is the Wall Street Journal. I'm sorry, it's not, number 2 is the New York Times. WAPO's in there. We've talked about NPR being up there, PBS News, all the MSNBC, all the usual suspects. If you're looking at Fox News, they are all about the protest on college campuses, the wokeness of it all. Again, all of these things are true. This is the thing with Fiat News, with the choice of story type. It's not that these are lies. It's not even that these are unimportant. These are interesting stories that I think a well-informed citizen should be made aware of. College protests, the Trump criminal trial.
There was a comment for...
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Peter Atwater made the comment, he's a professor at multiple different colleges from work, and he was just like, just a reminder, most colleges in the country right now, nothing's happening. Like, I'm working at them. They're quiet.
Nothing.
There's nothing going on the campus. But
nothing.
Like, if you want to make news out of it, here's how you make news out of it.
Yeah, and it is news. And I'm not right. saying that any of this stuff is unimportant. It's important. What is striking to me, though, is A, the 24/7 breathless coverage of these events, and B, the other events that I think you could make a strong case of being actually much more impactful. I'll pick on Donald Trump because why not? Much more impactful that are getting no coverage, even though they my mind, they really should. Specifically, I'm talking about, you mentioned it, Matt, the company that acquired Truth Social and took it public. So it's, yeah, what is it? Trump Media and Technology Group. I think that's the full title of the company now. It was a Digital World Acquisition Corp, which took the, in a SPAC transaction, a special purpose acquisition company, took Truth Social, acquired that, and then since it was already public, it went public under that shell organization. Donald Trump owns more than 50% of the company. And just this past weekend, he was given an additional grant of stock. I don't know what this brings him up to, probably about 60, 65%, I think, maybe even close to 70% of the outstanding shares in the company, with a market cap, with a value of $5.5 billion. $5.5 billion.
And now, revenue of what? Like almost nothing, right?
Oh, I think revenue of like $5 billion. I mean, it's just a laughable amount. And it's run by laughable people. I mean, just the silliest people in the world. Devin Nunes is the CEO now of Truth Social. And it's just silly from start to finish. It is a meme stock. It is, in the parlance, a shit coin. It is no different than Dogecoin or however you pronounce it. It's the same thing. It's just a more traditionally structured crypto coin that's got a famous person shilling for it. That's it. And Trump's direct stake in this is worth, call it $5 billion. $5 billion with a B, American dollars. Now, this all happens because there's a major U.S. Wall Street firm, Susquehanna, that has been supporting the SPAC and supporting the stock, since it started. Since this whole process started. This whole process started about a year and a half ago. Susquehanna is run by Jeff Yass. Jeff Yass is the largest contributor by far to Republican candidates in this country. It's all designed to give billions with a B of dollars to somebody who might be the next president of the United States in a few months.
And
in a few months, that's when Trump can actually sell this stock. He can monetize it for actual cash money. I don't know they'll be worth $5 billion then. It might be worth more, right? But it's going to be worth some billions of dollars to Donald J. Trump courtesy of Jeff Yass and Susquehanna, who are the sponsors of this from the start. And there's no talk about this on any media outlet. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a kind of a buried paragraph of a observation in the Wall Street Journal, because they, of course, they talk about stuff like this in passing. This is crazy stuff to me.
What's the, like, not their editors anymore stacking this stuff, but this, why, what would be keeping a media outlet from making this interesting to their audience or presenting it as of interest to their audience? Like, what's the, what do you think is missing?
I don't know, Matt. It's just, it's so odd to me that we have, I mean, it is literally breathless coverage on CNN if you can subject yourself to listen to their coverage of the Trump trial. I mean, it's crazy. It's just crazily over the top, where every statement by every witness is dissected for how it hurts Trump and how, they have three or four observers during the day who are looking at Trump's demeanor, saying, well, he really doesn't like this, does he? And it's just this kindergarten crap. Which will have no bearing on his being elected. And yet you have something over here, you know, that nobody's even ever touched on or mentioned. Billions of dollars put directly into the pocket of a man who could be the next president of the United States. I mean, how is not this not the story, as opposed to, yep, that happened, and we're on to talking about obviously politically motivated trial. And by the way, look, to be clear, I think Trump lies like the three of us breathe oxygen. I think he obviously falsified these business records to pay off Stormy Daniels and kill the story. But yeah, you know, that's a misdemeanor. The felony here, which the Biden DOJ said, no, this is a crappy case. We're not going to try him on a felony charge of election interference on this. Hey, it's the felony charge and the like that just makes this, come on, guys, what are we doing here? It takes away from the real criminal charges here, the federal criminal charges, whether it's on the mishandling of classified documents, mishandling, or whether it's what is just this grotesque putsch that Trump orchestrated to try to stay in office. I don't get it, Matt. I don't understand it. I don't know why there's no attention paid to the things that matter, where there's enormous things paid to these theatrics. I've been thinking a lot of, what do you guys think? I'm hard pressed to come up with a reason other than that they want Trump to keep going. They like being in this theatrical position as opposed to doing actual investigation around actual things that matter.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make any sense at all. I mean, I would think, you know, the Trump media is going to be a front page story when it inevitably collapses. I'm sure, right? I mean, at some point, this thing is a house of cards sitting on top of almost no revenue. So someday, who knows when that'll be, it's going down 90%, right? And then that becomes the story, especially if Trump is selling into that, because I assume he's going to get rid of this as soon as he can. He's probably smart enough to understand that this is, you know, very overvalued relative to what it's worth.
Well, it's worth nothing, Jack, but neither are, yeah, I'm sorry, all my Bitcoin friends, but there's no inherent value in Bitcoin. The value in Bitcoin is its elegance and it's good art. Well, whatever you think about all the crypto coins now, a lot of them are good art. That's why they call them shit coins. There's nothing to a Dogecoin, right? But it was worth, and I think could still be worth, a lot of money. I mean, there are billions of dollars in these crypto coins that mean nothing. It's a piece of art. It's an affinity for an idea. And you say, oh, there's going to be no value to having an affinity to something that is associated with Donald Trump, the idea of Donald Trump. I'm not so sure that goes away. I'm not so sure at all. If Donald Trump is president of the United States, I don't think Trump Media and Technology Group stock is going to collapse. Hell no. This notion that, oh, well, the fundamentals mean that this stock goes down. I mean, maybe, but also maybe not. Since when do fundamentals matter for this stuff?
No, you're right. It's interesting to think about that, what you just said, though. Like, if he's the president of the United States and this thing is still out there, I mean, that's an interesting dynamic that we've never seen before.
Well, it's a way to funnel billions of dollars to a political candidate in a way that in the past you really couldn't do. You could funnel millions of dollars to their political action committee. You could, after they're out of office, you could, you know, Reid Hoffman can give the Obamas $100 million development deal with Netflix, or Bertelsmann can give him a $60 million cash advance on his memoir. So there are ways to get money to candidates or politicians, but billions of dollars right out in the open. And everybody goes, yep, that's happening. And, you know, yawn and let's move on and talk about some cockamamie trial or I don't know, man. It's really odd to me. It's really odd to me. And I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Let's jump into the zeitgeist.
Speaking of things I don't get.
Yeah. Speaking of things none of us get. It's not a house of cards if we're playing cards. Dave and Buster's just made a move into, for lack of a better word, the world of gambling. You want to tell us what's going on with Dave and Buster's, Ben?
Oh, yeah. So now, you know, you go into Dave and Buster's, the adult arcade, and on the Dave and Buster's app, you can bet on your score at, I don't know, do they still have Poppin' Shop? That was always my favorite. The basketball game or whatever game you're playing there, you're competing against your friends and you can put a cash wager on the game, which of course means you can put a cash wager on anybody playing the game, which of course means that you're basically turning Dave and Buster's into a paramutual wagering organization. You know, these things are kind of related, right? I mean, we all just kind of say, oh, yeah, sure, why not? Why not have gambling on anything? Let's bet on it. Let's bet on anything and everything. And it's the same attitude with shit coins, with meme stocks. It's like, why not? We'll make up some crazy story about, oh, the short interest is going to be the mother of all short squeezes, MOAS. Yeah, that's been a story around a lot of these meme stocks. It's all made up. It's all wrong. Jack, to your point, there's no fundamentals here, but we're just so far past the fundamentals. We're not even pretending that there are fundamentals involved in any. I think that's what's really happening today. We're not even pretending I saw Christy Noom. How do you pronounce her last name? Do we know?
I don't know.
I've only read this name. I don't know how to say it. Nico, oh, crap.
Yeah, it's one of these names that we've all read. Yeah. But the thing is, we'll call her Christy Noom, all right? So, and she authored this biography. Have you guys seen this? Where she's got a passage in there about how when she met, Kim, the North Korean leader, hell, I'm even blanking on his names, right? He underestimated her and they had some kind of weird interaction. And then she's never met the guy in her life. And then she's asked about this. First of all, she's not even pretending that she actually wrote the book. Right? We're not even pretending that it's anything other than ghostwritten. But then it's like, well, she doesn't even pretending that she read was ghostwritten about her. She doesn't even pretend. She says, well, when this passage was brought to my attention, we immediately blah, blah, blah. I've met many world leaders in my time.
Like at the Wikipedia page. Like that's what it's all reading this.
It was like that. Yeah. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me. And none of the questions were about that. None of the questions were about, well, I mean, okay, so you didn't write the book. And you didn't even read what was written about you in this book that you wrote. There's so many layers to the we're not even pretending anymore. That all of this is just of a type. We're not even pretending. Yeah, well, of course it's got no value. Of course it's got no fundamentals to it. Of course I didn't write that. Of course I'm lying. So what? It's just everywhere, from, not just politics, but at Dave and Buster's, and everything. It's just we're not even pretending anymore. And I don't get it. I don't get when the water in which we frogs are being boiled. I have no idea how or where it got to this temperature, but here we are.
Just think about this for a second. And I know you guys did a cursed knowledge on this too, which was fantastic. This is just everywhere now. So do we just assume, like watching the Sixers and the Knicks, like, the other week, and we're just like every single like inbound pass has odds below it apparently now. Like, is this everywhere?
It's not even that though. Like also like Bill Pito, like the host, the studio host is like with the gambling guy, like during the Knicks game, like talking about the bets you should be making and stuff. It's just amazing to me how it came from like taboo, we don't talk about this at all, to like, it's just like a natural part of the Knicks game now that like all this betting stuff.
What's crazy to me is what's lost, right? So what's lost here in our focus and our attention on the gambling, the show trial, the meme stocks, the protests, what all these, I think, have in common when we, we're not even pretending anymore, is that these are derivatives. Use a financial term. They are derivative. They're a small piece. They're a separate, they're a game that's layered on top of the larger game. And so if we're paying attention to these derivatives, like how many rebounds plus steals does this player get? What's the over-under on that player? What we're not paying attention to is, hey, was it a good game? How's your team doing? It's not about the team. It's not about the game. It's not about sport. It's about the bet. Similarly, Jack, you're talking about, well, what are the revenues of Truth Social? Right. Markets are no longer about fractional ownership of cash flows and a real world operating business. We're not There's no attention paid to any of that. It's all on the derivative, on the bet. In politics, it's not about what are the actual policy initiatives that are being proposed here and could actually get passed to change, you know, could actually result in legislation or executive action or what have you. No, it's about the derivative bet. Did he look upset at the trial today? Oh, that'll get him. He must really be needing this. It's all these derivative bets. It's our form, our modern form, I think, of bread and circuses. And maybe this is the answer. It's the modern form of distraction away from what actually matters, the fundamentals of companies and owning a fractional share of them, the beauty of sport and rooting for a team and their competitive efforts against another team. Politics as a way of actually creating policy to make for a better city, state, country.
To your point, I was watching that. I just gone onto the Knicks game. I went to the wrong Knicks game by mistake the other night, like to the betting channel. And to your point, it was like there was not a Knicks game. It was like three guys on the side talking about all the bets. Like there was no.
It's like OTV betting.
It didn't even matter what was happening in the Knicks game. It was just. And I guess a lot of people watch that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's this we'll call this the speculation layer has oozed over everything in our world. Certainly it's oozed over markets where it's not about fundamentals. You know, Jack asking about what are the revenues of two
systems. I know. I got to get over that.
It's been, you got to get
I've been trained for all these years, like being the guy that has to like look at the fundamentals, and I got to get
exactly.
over it. Like.
But that's the thing, Jack. We all grew up in that church. That was all our religion, all of us. And yeah, it we got to get over it. Politics, it's all used over that. So now it's nobody pretending anymore. Sports is oozed all over that. I mean, so it's not really recognizable. Greater and greater parts and pieces and huge chunks of our social lives have been contaminated with this. I don't know how we get it back is the thing. I think the only thing we can do is try to carve out whatever small pieces of actual human connection and social interaction we can that are separate from the derivatization, that are separate from the speculation, that are separate from the we're not even pretending anymore aspects that have infected vast swaths of our social lives. I don't know how we get it back. I don't.
Well, let's jump to my favorite spectator sport, Twitter, where we've got a tweet of the week on the pickup in U.S. labor costs. Jack, do you want to tell us what we're looking at here?
Yeah, this is something you've been talking about a lot, Ben, on the podcast. Yeah. The Bloomberg story was U.S. labor costs accelerate to 1.2%, biggest advance in a year. And your tweet was, if you don't see that we're in an embedded wage price inflationary environment, you're not just paying attention. Yeah, this is something you've been talking about a lot here, that underlying all of this, I mean, we still have a lot of inflation.
Yeah, and I intentionally did use the word spiral. Usually you hear the phrase wage price spiral, but I said an embedded wage price inflation environment. And I meant that I that was an intentional choice because everyone wants to set up the straw man, meaning the crazy argument to argue against. I guess I'm no stranger to that either, although I find that so many people want to say, oh, you're saying that, there's runaway inflation. Because no, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we've got, however you want to measure it, core, trimmed meat, whatever you're talking about, inflation, our real world expectations for the price of things, for the price of labor, is it's going up by 4 to 5% a year. That's it. That's all I'm saying. And the two go together. Because the immediate response was, well, that's a good thing that wages are going up, 4% more than the price. And it's like, I want labor to be rewarded. I want good working men and women to make more money. I do want that. I really do. But these things don't exist in a vacuum. The wages that you are paid go hand in hand with the prices that corporations set for their goods and services. I'm sorry, but it does. The two are inseparable. They are two sides of the same coin. Wages and prices are two sides of the same coin.
This is, by the way, this is something that really hit me. We had Bob Elliott in our podcast a long time ago, and he was basically saying this idea. He was like, you're not going to have 5% wage growth and 2% inflation. It's impossible.
Like, it's impossible. It's not a thing. It's not a thing. And yet, again, it's kind of this derivatization, the speculation layer. We intentionally, or I'll say political entrepreneurs, intentionally chop things up into smaller pieces so that you can bet on it, so that you can make political hay out of it. We did this. I'll give you a great example. We did this when we separated the deed, the ownership of a home, from the mortgage, the amount of money you make, you owe on a home. So for a long time, those things were in one single document. You owe money to the bank on your mortgage. You pledge the deed to your house. And then what we invented, what Wall Street invented, was a way to split those things so that you would buy and sell just the mortgage part of things. And you'd have some sort of kind of pointer that goes back to the deed and the ownership if you ever, stopped payments or you weren't able to make payments. But for the most part, we kind of forgot about that part and we just separated off financial aspect. So it's the same with wages and prices. It's in a political self-interest to try to separate the two. But ultimately, because they're not separable, they always come back together. They're two sides of the same coin.
So do you think, with respect to inflation, you think we're just in for above average inflation for a long time, right? You're not thinking like we're going to get 7, 8, 9% inflation again. You're just thinking this is going to be with us for a really long time.
What I think, Jack, is that we have a system that is extraordinarily fragile, non-robust, meaning that it has been optimized for such specific characteristics, macroeconomic characteristics, optimized for profit, for votes, for you name it, that if you move to a new, right, $10 word alert, equilibrium, balancing point, the wheels start coming off of this highly optimized system. So we had 15 years of very low inflation and very low interest rates and very low wage growth. That's a stable equilibrium. Zero works. There are winners and there are losers, but zero works. Zero works. Doesn't work great. Doesn't work great, but for 15 years, that's what we had. And so we built up this global political economic system based on that. On that balancing point. And then COVID came and we put trillions of dollars into the US economy. Just that was the helicopter dumping of money. Here you go. Here's some trillions of dollars. Don't worry about paying it back. Just spend it. And so we did. And that creates the expectation in our actual lives that now prices are going to go up. So we're now at a new balancing point where it's 4 to 5% a year. Everything's going to go up 4 to 5% a year. And given this highly optimized, non-robust system we've built over the last 15 to 20 years, that system breaks under 4 to 5% inflation every year. It breaks. It doesn't break fast, but it's going to break. And so that's, we're in that breaking point now, because of course the reaction is, no, we're not in that world. We're not in that 4 to 5% world. No, my fingers in my ears. I'm not going to listen to it. No, don't hear you. And now we're coming to grips with the fact that, we're at a new balancing point. It's 4 to 5%. That can work. That can absolutely work. That's how the U.S. economy was basically built around for a long time. Long, long time. It can work. But a lot's going to break before we get back to a system that's set up around 4 to 5%. That's what's happening, Jack, right? It's the denial that we're at this new balancing point, which works. But the system we've set up, it has to break down before we can reform around this balancing point of 4 to 5%.
Do you feel that weird balance? I keep thinking about this. Everybody's complaining about the grocery store still. Everybody's feeling the cost of these things going up. Everybody's complaining at the grocery store that I frequent that all of a sudden there's one guy who does the carts now in the parking lot. Like they're down to one guy. And it's like, well, everything costs too much and there's no carts there. Yep. It's like, well, they don't have the money to pay enough wage to hire the next guy to fetch the carts. And all the people feeding into this place are struggling to afford the groceries in this particular store. And it's like, it's such a thin balance that it's riding on.
Yeah.
But I feel like we could take that story and multiply it out by a million.
Everywhere. So there are two famously crappy businesses in the world, banks and grocery stores. And by crappy business, I mean your margins are razor thin. These are terrible businesses. These are terrible businesses. But they're necessary businesses, and there are people who, they're families, they're all
we don't bankers. Call them utilities, but they're effectively utilities. We all need to get our food. Right. We all need to put our paycheck somewhere.
Right. But this is where, when systems break down, this is where it breaks down.
This is where they have.
The banking system, it breaks down in food. And this is true if you're talking about the United States. This is true whether you're talking about China. This is true whether you're talking about whatever country. It's these crappy low margin businesses that are entirely necessary for the functioning of your society. So they get highly optimized for whatever balancing point you're at. And then you get to a new balancing point, and that's where you're going to feel the pain. That's where it starts to break down. What's worse, Matt, to your point, is that every business in every industry in the United States, in the West, in China, has been optimized in this sort of way.
Jack, ask a dumb question, which is not a dumb question.
Well, I can do it. I've done it before.
Oh, man. It's like on command. This is incredible. It's actually a skill.
I don't want to call it yet. So Pavlovian. It's not that it was a dumb conference, but it's a really interesting observation. And for everybody who's going to conferences this year, I think they're going to see a lot of what you just saw, especially in financial services. Ask the question.
Well, I hate these dumb anecdotal things, but it's my dumb question, so I get to do this. I was thinking about like inflation, the higher for longer, and the narrative, and when it becomes common knowledge. And like I was at a planning conference the other day, and basically every single And these are people who are paying to be there, these speakers, for the most part.
Yeah.
Every single one was the same exact thing. It was basically a half an hour on why inflation is going to stay with us and rates are going to be higher for longer, followed by, surprise, another half an hour on what their products are that are perfectly suited for this new high rate environment. And some of them were like illiquid products. They were talking about private equity and it reducing the volatility of your portfolio, which was an interesting take. But anyway, I was just thinking like, I always tend to like think about fading those types of things. Like whenever this conference always has the new hot stuff and like whenever everybody is talking about a certain thing, I think about the other side of it. And I was just thinking like, when does this, not in terms of inflation being higher, but when does it become priced into markets, or when does the narrative get to the point that it becomes common knowledge so that like from a market perspective, you got to go the other way. And I just don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. I think it's now, right? I think that the big idea is true, meaning that we're at a new balancing point. You can't stuff the inflation, the expectation genie back into the bottle. It's so difficult. I think we're back at that, at normalized interest rates, normalized price of money, normalized expectations for how much labor goes up every year, for how much wages and prices of goods and services go up every year. I think we're back at that, 4 or 5%. I really do. So I think that's true. I think it is higher for longer in that sense, if you're comparing it against the last 15 years when all those things have been 0%. So in that sense, in that big tectonic plate shifting sense, I think it's exactly right. And I tell you what, if you're a family office, you're just a family, right? And you've got some money saved up. The only thing you've got to get right is whether you're in that 0% world or that 5% world, right? That's it. That is the only question that matters for how you think about your long-term investment strategy, allocation strategy, you name it. So I want to stipulate the general, I think, correctness of that view. And when this highly optimized system starts flying apart at this new 5% level, the economy goes down. Bonds work. Interest rates go down as economic activity goes down. So there's a, this is the way economies and markets and everything goes work. It's a balancing act. You can't go too far in one direction. To your point, Jack, when everybody gets on one side of the boat, I want to start making some bets that, you might want to be on the other side of the boat. So it really depends. We're getting into this topic. I know you guys talk a lot. What's that time horizon? How long out are you thinking about? If you're thinking about over the next 6 months or year, I think we're looking at a stagflationary shock post-election here in the United States, which is going to be miserable for all those strategies that are being touted at this that conference that you're at. It's going to be bad for everything. I don't know what works in a stagflationary world. I really don't. This is what we always say, right? That you want to have a long time horizon. Well, if you really mean that, then I think we are at a higher for longer, meaning we're back at that 4 to 5% world, a normalized world. But man, we have a lot of institutions that are built around the 0% balancing act. And if we start going back into recession and stagflation and all that stuff, you better believe that there's going to be a lot of efforts by people to say, oh, we're going to make the world back to that 0% world.
It's interesting to think too, from the terms of just building these products up, because it's, mm-hmm. you're building products on some, maybe not a completely stable set of expectations, but that's how ideas get built. You have some expectation that is relatively agreed upon. You build something that fits over it, and then people want to buy that thing. I'm thinking back like over the years in the business when you get visited by or called on behind all the shops selling their latest wares. And when everybody has the same story, that it's like time to stop. Don't put any new dollars into this thing, because every single right. person I talk to is trying to sell me the same thing, which means they all have the same expectations and assumptions. And that means something's built into that price. I mean, Ben, I've heard you've talked about it before too. In the financial crisis, what was it? They were handing you the prospectuses for the books, And I think you had a director tell you, what did he tell you to do with the...
Yeah, my old boss, right? Say, what do I do with all these prospectuses that I'm getting for all these IPOs? He said, you just put them over in the corner. And then when this cycle turns, and it always will at some point, that's your list of shorts right there. And he was exactly right. It's shooting fish in the barrel. They're all based on the same assumptions, on the same vision. It's what markets do. And this is true whether we're talking about being public market investors, it's true for venture capitalists, it's true for private equity people, it's true for bankers and their loans. This is the way of the world. So it's a tough question, Jack. I absolutely believe that we are in higher for longer in that kind of tectonic plate shifting thing. When we're talking about decades, I absolutely think that's true. And I absolutely think that everyone's on that side of the boat, so that when we get the next shock, you're going to get a lot of people saying, what the hell did I just do?
And I think that's a great answer, because we deal with this as clients all the time. And, we try to say this to clients, rates may be high for a long period of time, but that thing that the guy's calling you up and is trying to sell you may still not be something you want to buy. And that separation is really important to think, all right, just what the environment is doesn't necessarily mean that just because that all these people that are out here trying to sell you stuff now, they're selling you something that's going to benefit you.
Yeah. Look, I mean, and money burns a hole in everybody's pocket. Especially when you're either nervous and worried, which is what politicians do intentionally to us, or when you look around and you see your neighbors doing better than you. And, both of those things motivate us a lot more than I'd like to believe.
So Matt, two things here. First of all, I'm excited that eventually we are going to get a part two of the Hot Ones Cultish Corner, because I really like that one, and I know you have more to say on that. So that's coming in the future, and I'm potentially an article tied to it as well. But for today, we're going to talk about, this was really awesome what you did. So we did this, and we mentioned this earlier, but we did this P&L for a Purpose event. We interviewed 24 market experts, including Ben, over a 12-hour period, and you went through and created a song that fit most for every one of them. You have this massive thread on Twitter, which I would highly recommend people go read. And I think today you're going to talk about the one you created for Ben, right?
We got to talk about this one. So far, nobody has, and there are definitely some risks on this list. And I was like, I really hope.
No pushback?
Tick somebody off. No, nobody's directly pushed back. I got a few very nice note from Perth Toll and Meb Faber approving of the George Michael song I picked for her. So there's been some good feedback so far and approvals. But Ben, I got to ask, because I picked you a 2004 Kelly Clarkson song. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah, of course. No.
It's an inescapable song, but...
It was inescapable. And, this was when, my daughters were all in their, American Idol phase. So we had a Kelly Clarkson phase in the Hunt House.
Now, do you know anything about the making of the song?
I know nothing about the making of the song. No.
Okay. So the thing that triggered this had to be the song is your topic that you talked about was the map is not the terrain. And we were talking about inflation, which for whatever reason, there's this other indie pop rock song from the same era from about 2002 or three by this band called the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. Have you ever heard their song Maps?
I have. In fact, yeah, no. It's crazy. I'm a Yeah Yeah Yeahs fan. Go figure.
So for the people who don't know, that's the Wait, They Don't Love You Like I Love You song. It gets played in all sorts of things. So what's really interesting to me is one wouldn't know that Maps is actually the influence for the giant Kelly Clarkson hit. It was actually the source material to make the song. So Max Martin, who's the super producer, and Dr. Luke, whatever with his name, we won't get into that stuff in the last few years. They're in the studio, and this is a weird thing I think a lot of people don't know about some of the biggest pop songwriters. They don't listen to pop music.
Right.
They listen to everything else. In fact, in many cases, they'll directly avoid the pop charts until they're trying to just fine-tune in the song that's already written, recorded, and ready to go. And they don't because they're always looking for what's the new interesting thing. So Max Martin is in his post Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys, everything else phase. And he's looking for, I want to do rock again, or I want to do something in that range. And so him and his partner, Dr. Luke, are listening to the indie rock songs of the day. And they come across this song by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, the song Maps. And they're like, oh, I hate when it gets to the chorus, because the song goes here and then it builds and then it builds and it's ready to explode. And it goes all the way back down. And they were like, all right, well, let's just rewrite the song the way we would write it and see if we can make it a smash. So they write Since You've Been Gone. Funny extra detail. Were you familiar with the wonderful body of work by Pink, who also got a shout out on the playlist? Did your daughters like Pink, Ben?
I mean, I heard, of course they did, right? But I'm not as familiar with Pink's oeuvre as Kelly Clarkson, for sure.
Well, we definitely got, for our friends with the Pink ETF, we definitely got a Raise Your Glass reference in on that playlist too, because I just wanted to make sure I mentioned.
I'm familiar with that song. Of course.
Another great song. Yeah. Pink's fascinating in her own right, but we're going to leave this out. So she says no to the song. She gets first look at the song and she's the top pick to take the song, but she says no. Then they try to pitch it to, I want to say it was Hillary Duff. I had a note here, but now I can't. So like Hillary Duff though, she can't. So Dr. Luke, I think, wants it to be her. She can't hit the high notes. So they're like, all right, well, she's out.
She's out.
So then Clive Davis is like, all right, well, what are you looking for? And Max Martin is like, I'm done with the Backstreet Boys thing. I need somebody who can rock. And he says, this Kelly Clarkson American Idol girl. And he's like, I don't want another that. I don't want another created pop star. It's like, just go out and meet with her. And so they go out, they sit with her, they play the song, they talk. And she says like, hey, no, I actually really like all this rock stuff. That was part of the cool thing about her as an American Idol contestant. And so she gets the song. The genius of the song, again, is that if you listen to it and you think about it dynamically, if you listen to Maps, you hear, we get to the chorus, the they don't love you like I love you, and the song goes off the cliff. You listen to Since You've Been Gone, and my God, when that chorus hits, you have been thrust into perhaps the perfect marriage of basically 80s pop, like 90s Euro stuff. And we have a new era of American pop rock music that enters the charts for the periods that follow.
That's a great story, Matt. I'm really glad to hear it. And I've always liked Kelly Clarkson because she seems authentic to me. What the hell do I know? But this makes her seem even more authentic to me. I love it.
I'm fascinated by this too. Comment on this if you like. Like the aspect of these songwriters trying to find the right missionary to break their story. They have this thing they want to do. They're not going to look for the headlines to find the story. They're going to look for all the other places to piece together the story they want to tell. How does that strike you? Like, what is it about that process that makes this?
I love it. I mean, I totally love it because it just relates. It's the construction of pop stars, right? We all know it exists. It's the same way you had the construction of media stories and politicians and the like. And it's really interesting to me when you've got talent in the construction part and it meets the talent in the talent who can hit the notes and develop it and deliver it authentically. There's a lot of carryovers here because that's what it takes. That's what clicks in our brain to make a song or a politician or an investment idea. That's what makes it work. And you put all those pieces together.
And I'm so fascinated by how like talent is a small thing. Talent is an individual thing. What we do with the talent becomes the popular thing. That becomes the thing that swirls that everybody can talk about, everybody can sing along to or whatever. But that authentic talent is a small thing that has to be small and local and personal and all those things definitionally.
Love it.
This needs to be like a series of podcasts, Matt, where you talk about how you came up with each song for each person. Because it's like you have such an amazing story behind each one. Like you just write these down.
Yeah. This has got to happen. We got to make this happen.
Well, I tried. I did liner notes that, like you said, they're in a thread on Twitter. There's a Cultish Creative post where it's all written out. And I think the song links came across better. But, yeah, I mean, before you know it, I'm going to be trying to say why Islands in the Stream is a relevant song for macro strategists. But why not?
But why not?
But why not? I'm going to have some fun. I've got some notes here. Let me take it through what I heard today, guys. So we started off with the big picture. I go back to this all the time. I think this is one of my favorite Epsilon Theory epithets of why am I reading this now? Asking, why are they publishing? Why are they talking this thing up? Why are they trying to tell me how to think now wherever I'm looking? Because the big stories aren't always the biggest stories. But all those stories, they're maps, they're explanations. We have to step back and say, like, what's serving who? Is this serving me? Does this matter? Take it back to that last thing. It's a matter for the talents that I have that I want to put into the world on my local level. We talked about business fundamentals, about how business fundamentals, I wrote, are basically now just degen fun. They're derivatives. So it's derivatives and busters. DJT is basically derivative Trump. It's all just derivative degen map making all the way down, which is a little disheartening, but again, why am I reading this now? Pay attention to it. Inflation. We talked inflation, the derivatives there, the just the political entrepreneur that chops up all the little bits of the story or the big story into all these little digestible bits so that we can get the bite-sized aspects of like higher costs and higher wages. So get used to that. It's this past ZERP emergent story, as you explained it, and it'll go on until it breaks. We talked about banks and grocery stores and just the next crisis might not be a banking crisis. It's a supermarket sweep crisis. Products are built on stable expectations. I think that's a really important thing I want to remember on this. You don't build something on unstable chaos, just like you don't build a house like on a beach on the sand. You got to build something on stable expectations. So it's not dumb, Jack. It's extra not dumb to realize everybody is building on the same expectation set. And that probably means like the foundation can't support all those things. Very important to notice that stuff. Ben, the point you just made about the construction of pop stars, the construction of media, tying this all together, the construction of talent, about how talent is small, popular is big. These stable foundations are what markets are built on. And stable foundations are kind of a myth in that way. So if we're thinking about building, we have to actually just think about building for unstable. We have to think about building smaller. We have to think about building more local, more personal, building for our people, because that's who gets us through. So find your map, know the terrain. It's not stable. That's part of the fun. That's what the talent is for. Thank you for joining me, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. What a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to like and subscribe wherever you're watching Breaking News so more people can find our show. If you know another clear-eyed and full-hearted individual, why not share this episode with them too? Like we said at the top, the media is making us tick, and it's our job to talk. Follow the headlines at fiatnews.com. Follow Ben at epsilontheory.com and at epsilontheory on Twitter. Follow Jack at validiacapital.com and at Practical Quant on Twitter. Follow Matt at sunpointinvestments.com, cultishcreative.com, and at cultishcreative on Twitter.